bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody, that's me.
So, Justin's about to venture out into the world of podcasting. This thing called podcast. Have you heard about this, Brian? Podcasting?
I think it's going to be huge. No. This is actually a wonderful example of a real life case study in the moment as we're getting ready to launch. Justin's got a plan, and everything we're about to discuss. Keep in mind one thing, and maybe I think we'll all agree on this. Regardless of how all of this turned out, the smartest thing Justin has done has been soliciting the advice of everybody around him. Like everybody is a treasure trove, whether you agree or disagree with whatever it is they're into, or whatever their philosophies are. I think, Justin, would you agree that at this point, pre-launch, you would say that it's been a net positive to get the advice of as many people as you can?
100%. It's funny. Bryce just pulled up a tweet that I had over the weekend that editing my own audio has maybe I find myself coming back to a Kanye West tweet from when he did the Life of Pablo album, where one of the songs is called Wolves. And he just 3 days after it was out was just like, just tweeted out, I'ma fix wolves. So it was one of those things that I just thought so much about, where it's like, it's a way for me to, like, it makes me feel comfortable, because I'm like, even Kanye West, somebody who's at the top of the music world, is like releasing an album and it's like, ah, I don't like that part. And now we're in a digital world where it's not just one thing that goes to press and then all of a sudden it's on CDs and the boat has kind of left the harbor culturally. You can go back and change it. So push comes to shove, there's a lot of things that I could fix. That being said, yes, throughout the process, if there's one thing that I have always felt kind of gifted in, it is that I'm surrounded by tremendously high functioning and ambitious people that I've learned all the important lessons of my life directly through. And I would certainly count the two men who we started this podcast with among them. I've learned a lot from the stuff that Bryce has done in terms of being a music artist and creating stuff on a deadline within a system like you guys do now at Modern Rogue and Scam Nation. So this process, I've relied a lot, and there really is, there's an art to doing it, because, this project that I have is, I think, 7.5 to 8 hours when you listen to everything. That's a lot, right? You know, that's a substantial audiobook. That's a entire podcast series, as this will be. And so, it's hard, you have to be careful about how much you are feeding to the people that you need to get opinions from, because, you almost, even as somebody for whom you are soliciting opinions from, you got to make sure that they are listening to it and they understand it and they can give you that feedback in the same way that a listener would give judgment once they hear it.
That's such a critical thing, because I know with the books, when I started writing books, is I know I could go to you for feedback, Justin, because we have similar tastes in a lot of things, and it was a very, very instrumental. And, I had some friends who wanted to offer advice, but I'm like, they don't read, one, many of them didn't read, they didn't read the genre, and it was, even separate from the fact from people understanding how to help you versus them try to get their own ideas across. And that was a big thing, was learning, I go to this person for this advice because I know they really understand this, and I go to this person for this advice and this person for that, and understanding your brain trust has different parts to it. Your brain trust, there's different parts of the brain, and the same thing when you put together your brain trust is to know what you want from them.
And specifically for me, you know, I knew, you know, when I sent you, Andrew, the first stuff, I knew that I was going to get different feedback than Brian was going to give me. And I know that the stuff that Brian was going to give me, you know, there was a point in which I sent the first like betas to everybody. And, you know, Andrew, you gave me awesome feedback that very much affected where the project went. One of the biggest things that you had was, you know, just separating in terms of theme, that it's like the first version of the first episode had an introduction to all of my characters. And Andrew, I remember, said to me, like, you know, like, I know, you know, depending on where you want to put stuff, but like, there's a lot of stuff about Nixon that is very different from the story about Kennedy. And it would probably benefit from having that separate. And that wound up being something that stuck with me throughout the process that eventually made me rewrite and reorganize the series so I could give that story its own kind of space to breathe. For Brian, on the other hand, Brian, I would explain Brian's reaction to the beta episode as like a transplant that was rejected by the host body. Like there was an element of Brian that I know was, that would be like, hey, look, if you want to go forward with this, understand that here's what's good. Here's what, you know, I think that the trajectory would be, but there kind of needs to be this fundamental retooling. I knew if I wanted to get the most out of the Brian feedback, because the Brian feedback, he is among one of the most gifted people that I know in terms of predicting a final audience's reaction, both from a craftsman's perspective on polish and also on a gut level, like here's where the psychology of the listener will be from the moment that they first see it to the moment that they first try it to the moment that you want to get them to by the very end. I don't know if there's really anybody else in my life that I know that can articulate it like that. And that's why it's like, I knew when the first one was like, like there's a lot here, we can go through it, and we did, but I'm like, nah, that's not the best version of the Brian feedback. The best version of the Brian feedback is I gotta bring it far closer to a finished product. And then at the point that we did that,
to your credit, the whole reason that you initiated program, you know, Brian full polish subroutine or whatever, is because you very clearly articulated your goals for this project. You made it very clear that this was not, if you had told me that it's like, man, I really think my fans are going to enjoy this, and I'm like, yes, they definitely will, it's fine as is, go ahead. But in a million different little ways, you had programmed me with the expectation of like, I feel like this could be a breakout hit, something that is easily palatable by people who have never even seen Night Attack, don't even know who I am, it stands on its own or whatever. And that subroutine is very, very different. There are different expectations for it. I feel like, to be honest, if there's anything interesting about that moment, it's your insistence that you very clearly set your expectations, and you asked me very sincerely what parts of this production are incongruent with the expectations that I'm trying to lay out for it.
You know, and it's interesting too, because like if you think about like what Brian does on a daily basis and what I do on a daily basis, where Brian's creating content, getting feedback, and that's every single day from everything you do, from the feeds here to the YouTube stuff. So you're very finely attuned to like, you know, if you do this, this is going to happen here, whatever, you know. And like for me, like I work very far away from like, you know, my feedback is I just go check, you know, the overall Amazon rating, and I look at the sales of a book. But other than that, you know, my day is, if I'm working on a writing project, it's like, how do I find the theme? How do I find, you know, my chapter? How do I find the structure? How do I find this sort of thing? And I'm just at that end. And as far as like where it lands with audiences and stuff, God, I have no idea. All I know is if I follow my little checklist, people tend to like it. But other than that, no clue.
That's actually a really good way to put it, because it's like I often describe all media creation as some form of spellcraft, where it's like, I don't know why it works, but I know if you say these things and do these moves and cause this thing, this result happens. And it's very hard to want to stray very far from that. And especially if, from a business perspective, we're recording this on the Monday before Black Friday. Black Friday is a big enough day. Everybody's buying their gifts or a big enough week now, I guess, or month. But all of a sudden, there was a number of moves that we had intended to make that now that we're up against it, it's like, all I know is that the spell works when we did this thing before. And so let's say we scale back some of these changes and just make, you know, mild tweaks.
Nothing clarifies life like a deadline, man. Like,
yep.
That is holy crap. Like, you know, I have, you know, looking at this big board that I have a light specifically trained on, just so all I can do is see days until the launch, daily stuff that I have to do because I have a date that it has to be done by and I got to start promoting it.
And and there was definitely that moment we were chatting, was it yesterday or the day before? We were chatting by text about the album art, and there was sort of a back and forth discussion that really boiled down to there was some perfect version of the thumbnail that was bold and would land perfectly for both Justin and for me. But then there's what we could ship now, and being up against deadline makes you evaluate like what's truly important, whether or not your thumbnail, you know, tells this esoteric crazy journey of a story, or whether or not it communicates that's what this thing is.
And that's the thing, is part of what I wanted to do here, and this went through a bunch of different versions of like, all right, what is this for? What am I doing this for? Part of it is to prove that I can. Part of it is to prove that I can do something that is beyond live to tape podcasting, that I can get better at it. And that then I found when I tried to bring on a professional editor that I didn't even know where to start with her. Like, I had no clue what to ask of her. She was walking me through everything, and it became very clear that if I was going to bring her on, I was hiring a chef, not a nutritionist. And what I needed was a full nutrition program. I needed to know what vitamins were. I needed to know what saturated fats were. And for her, she's just like, all right, you just give me the stuff and I'll prepare it for you. But that's pretty much the best part of her artisanship. And so I realized I had to do it myself. I had to make sure that I knew the very basics of the storytelling, the very basics of the construction, the very basics of the publishing of it, so then I can go forward. But on a monetary level, initially I was thinking about a Kickstarter, to just kind of get the word out and to rally the base. And then eventually when I decided to do it by myself, I'm like, I feel like that would feel kind of dirty for me to be like, hey, pay me to make this thing that I really want to do. I would much rather get everybody's buy-in on ebooks and audiobooks, because from my perspective, especially if what I want out of this is increased notoriety in the political space, there is, and this is something that I remember Andrew telling me, like, you know, there's in politics, really, it's like writing is what matters. Writing a blog, writing a book. If you have one of those things, and specifically books, now all of a sudden you are just kind of looked at on a different level as opposed to just being a person with a Twitter account, although that can make you pretty popular. And so with the launch next week, you know, it's going to come with an ebook and an audiobook. And initially I was like, all right, well, I'll rewrite all the transcripts. And so this will read much more like a traditional book. And then at a certain point, I started looking at the schedule, and I'm like, a compilation of transcripts sounds a lot better to me right now. And you want to know what? If I have a compilation of transcripts and people like it well enough, and people are just buying it to support it, or just buying it because they want to have an opportunity to pour through the things that I'm saying in a little bit more focus, then I can always write another book. I can always take all that information and I can always add on to it, and I can always make it another narrative on top of this. The point of this right now is that a week from today, we've got a really awesome podcast ranking. We've got a really awesome Amazon ranking. We've got a really awesome Audible ranking. And that's the success. The success of all this is trying to get to that point.
And there is a temptation to believe that you only get one launch. And that is true to a point. I mean, you want it to be as complete as you're able to in that moment. But in a world where we're comfortable with a re-release as a gold edition or a platinum edition or a gold platinum turbo plutonium edition or whatever, like you sort of get multiple at bats, and that instinct that kept you from making it a Kickstarter, you mentioned that it made you feel dirty. I don't think it's a matter of feeling dirty so much as having a strong sense that you only get to press certain buttons so many times, and you felt like pressing that button was not necessary. And to be honest, I did the same thing when it came time. You know, we hit 90% funding on getting the studio space functional, and we just needed a boost on that last 10%. We did all of that behind the paywall specifically because I didn't want to do the whole, this is our target number, these are our numbers, this is your perceived ownership in the country, in the company, and so on. Instead, we reduced it all to a very simple narrative of, have you enjoyed this so far? Do you have some money that you don't mind throwing my way that you feel like I've already earned? Would you like some rewards that don't cost us very much to make, but will enhance your prestige? It was a weird moment to decide. I don't want to make any of our numbers public. I just want to say we only expressed it in terms of percentages. Like, there's a number we have to get from point A to point B. We're 30% of the way there, 40%, 50%. Hey, we made it. And then after we made it, people still kept showing up saying, hey, can I join in? And so likewise, I feel like you did yourself a very powerful service by not playing the Kickstarter game, because that's sort of a one-off adventure. Once you slay that dragon, you don't get to act like it comes back from the dead. Instead, you know, what you're doing is you're taking all that goodwill that you've built up, the real estate that you have in the minds of tens of thousands of people, and say, hey, this is the current project. If it's fun for you to, in terms of harvesting their efforts, their actual attention to click and subscribe on multiple platforms or whatever, if it's fun for you to proselytize, to go out to Reddit and talk about and share and say, hey, I'm an early investor in this indie band, basically, or if it's fun for you to give money directly to buy the book on Audible, then hopefully, you know, me, Justin Robert Young, has earned enough respect that none of this feels like a big ask for any of you.
Yeah. And everything comes with value immediately, which is, I think, the biggest thing is that it's like, boom, support me. You're going to feel great supporting me. It's probably going to be a grand total of like $5 to $8 if you buy both the audiobook and the ebook. And then at that point, like, you're going to feel good, and you're going to have two things, and you're going to be able to enjoy it the way you want.
I think one of the things I like is that you understanding that you have time to promote it, as Brian pointed out. And the thing that publishers don't realize is how much the world has changed, because when your main sources of income are an audiobook, a podcast, an ebook, is that those you can produce infinitely. You don't need a warehouse to have those things for. And so you can do a slow ramp up to there. You can try initially, bring attention to it, and then get this sort of the kind of the two-humped camel, where you get your little push initially, and then it starts to slow and build, and then you see a bigger spike later on as it starts to reach critical mass. And publishing companies don't think like that. A lot of people who do releases don't think about it. They think, I've got to do it all now, and if I don't, then it's all over.
Well, and keep in mind, publishing companies deal with an awful lot of people where they're only going to write one book. They can't rely on the idea that people are story factories, then they're going to be the next James Patterson, Stephen King, or whatever.
It's not even that. It's that publishing company, because of the way tax laws work, they basically have, like, they destroy their inventory after like 6 months or whatever, because that's the way they can realize the loss and not, and have it towards a tax benefit. So they don't like to keep books. So they won't even a book that could be a one book could be a slow burner and eventually sell a lot over a year. It's why bestsellers bit lists are based upon what are sold in a week and not a year. You don't hear what the year's bestseller is because publishers don't care. They're not incentivized towards it to their own detriment, which is why ebooks are taking such a big impact from that. And that's a big problem because you might have a book that's a slow burner that takes a long time to sort of reach popularity. But if the publisher stops publishing it, they lose out on that. And now there are a lot of ebook publishers and people like myself who are like, no, like you can have something that just takes, you know, like my Angel Killer book, if that had been a traditionally released book by a publisher, would have just flopped, never done anything. I did it, and it took from the time I released it to finally when it hit was 6 months, 7 months, and then it sold hundreds of thousands of copies.
Yeah, but, and that's no just in the ebook version before it got picked up by a publisher, right?
What's that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I will never forget being at the Pulse Loft at Dragon Con with Andrew. And Andrew, who is a very engaged person when we're hanging out, just not being able to stop look at his phone to just see like the insanely escalating numbers on Angel Killer. And that was something where it just like it was well reviewed enough. It was good enough. And it caught the right tailwinds, and you know that was it.
That was it. Hit that long. I released it like in March, and I to my own audience, and it got a really good response. And then it slowed down, and I'd moved on to my next book. Hollywood Pharaohs was the middle of promoting this, but the algorithms, the word of mouth, had built up behind my back. And the next thing you know, and that's the thing that like I think that's for other people out there creating stuff is know that like if it's out there and you're. You never know,
man.
You know?
Maybe that's sort of the theme that we're circling in on this episode is that you get multiple bites at the apple. Like we're now entering a phase with Scam Nation where it's been so long that there's no reasonable expectation that anybody watching today was there 11 years ago when Scam School first launched, and we can finally start revisiting all those and refreshing them with updated formatting, with updated quality of shooting, with a character that matches the type of stories that we're telling right now. Like there's a temptation to believe like you only get your one at bat, but that's just not true. You get to go back and keep on revisiting and relaunching in various iterations, everything.
And that's a very YouTube idea of not putting the same thing out multiple times.
Once you right, correct. And we're starting to dip a toe right now in the Twitter world as we start to monetize Twitter videos or whatever. Like one of the things I want to do next is do a whole tweet thread where we go back and revisit over the last 10 years. I think we've done eight of our family Christmas card videos. And it's around that time of year that I just want to take people on a journey starting in, I think 2010 all the way up through 2017. And then sort of build up excitement for what our next family Christmas card will be because those numbers are starting to get pretty good there as well.
And you see it in podcasting too, right? The NPR stuff, I know some of their shows, they'll rerun old episodes because they're evergreen, mostly interviews, right? And so
it doesn't take much to refresh it. Usually it's a up-to-the-minute, a recent reintroduction. Like, hey, guys, we're here. It's this time. It's this place. You know me from these things. We're going to go back and revisit this, and we'll have a little thing at the end of an update of what happened. And then, as a consumer, I'm totally fine with all of that. So it's like as much as, and I'm sure Justin's already processed all of this, but as much as it would feel like this is a do or die, must get it right moment, there's also kind of, we've seen precedents of ways to go back and enhance that release after the fact.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a do or die moment for me. I mean, the biggest thing is I just need to get the ebook into a place where it's sellable. I need to get the audiobook in a place that it's sellable. I know the ebook you can push revisions. I'm not sure about the audiobook, but other than that, you know, look, tomorrow on the PX3 feed, I'm going to put a version of the first episode. And so that's going to be designed to get everybody who are like inside basically my hardcores. Let's get the hardcores pumped, right? And then in a week's time, we release the main feed that will have a little bit extra in that first episode that'll go out on the PX3 feed. And that the only thing that is like you only really get the first bite of the apple on is in terms of podcast charts, like that's almost 150% new subscribers. So you really only get one chance to eat a Reese's when it comes to like if we're gonna get to number one or number five.
Couple of questions in terms of sort of a launch street team. The temptation is to believe that you put your thing out and then your fans spontaneously rally around you. Now, we're a little bit spoiled in Diamond Club in that we have a bunch of very passionate, self-starting, very internet savvy fans. But have you thought about how to, if not directly indicate what people should be doing, at least indicate where the hotspots are? Or is there a Discord server? I guess the Diamond Club Discord server would be the best place to sort of coordinate a street team. But it's like, when you do, and I don't know if you've planned to do this, like an AMA on /r/politics or whatever, that early momentum, those early upvotes matter an awful lot when it comes to building up a whole discussion about a thing. Have you started to put, and I know you're down to the wire and just getting the thing published, but what's your game plan and what are your priorities in that game?
So the biggest thing that I have known from the very beginning, and I do believe based on some of the research in terms of what numbers need to move to get to the higher echelon of the iTunes podcasting chart, I believe that within our own community, if I turn out a significant portion of that, then we can do it, right? But our community also includes Daily Tech News Show and The Morning Stream, this podcast, Night Attack. Like there's a reason why I'm launching it on a Tuesday, for example, because I know that in the 24-hour period, it's going to be very, very, very crucial to push everybody to subscribe to the feed that day. You know, that's pretty much it. And then, you know, once we get to wherever we peak at, that's the take a picture, remember that one forever kind of moment, that then gives our community a little something to show for it, right? Because everybody loves blowing up the Death Star. Nobody forgets the moment when that happens. And then at that point, it's all
promoting.
It's all basically, you know, because at that point it's only the first episode's going to be out, right? So I feel very confident in that first episode. I think that first episode's very good. So that is something that I'm happy about. I will feel confident going to war, and then at that point it's just each successive episode, get the word out there. And the reason why I'm releasing it now is because, and this is a, you know, we'll find out whether or not this is stupid. Two reasons. Number one, every time that I've fallen in love with one of these kinds of series, these limited run series, has always been over the holidays because I've got a lot of travel and shows take episodes off. And so all of a sudden you find yourself with time in your schedule that you look at your feed and you can't find stuff. And so what I want is for the buzz about this to hit while that's happening. And then the other consideration was, well, I mean, do I release it in January? Do I release it when all anybody's going to be doing is talking about politics? And I ultimately decided to do it a little bit earlier just so, A, the whole show will be out by January and people can binge it. You know, I would rather have a good word of mouth, great star rating, good momentum on the charts, and then we will see kind of where it goes from there.
Yeah, I think now is better. And you start off talking to about in how much a deadline helps clarify things. And like, I see that with my girlfriend when we get ready to like send a film off to what's called the DCP, which is like the digital version they send out to festivals and stuff. And when we're like, now's the chance to make the final edits, now's the chance to do this. And then all of a sudden everything zeroes in and focus and everything, you realize what's important and what's not.
Oh. Yeah.
Excited. So, sir, let us know what we can do. I will promote it on my email list, you know, my Twitter, whatever. If you want to do a Periscope with me where we talk about it, let me know. And, absolutely. You know, I'm excited. I barely use my email list to promote my own stuff, but, you know, I think it'll be fun to promote something you do. And yeah, I had somebody emailed me and I give them credit for it. Like they go, oh, can I use your email list now? And then I'm building one. I'll let you use mine in the future. And I'm like, well, I've been building this for a long time and it's sort of, I only use it sparingly and whatnot. And they're like, yeah, but can I use it? And I'm like, how do I politely say I don't know you? And that's like, you know.
Well, what you want to do in that case is what Peter Boghossian calls build a golden bridge, where it's like your ask is to full on dedicate your, you know, pledge your banner to my journey. But then what you want to do is have kind of a golden bridge where it makes it easy for them to meet you halfway, where it's like, hey, what if I did a special discount for your team or whatever? Something where you could say, hey, I like independent creators in general. I like this guy in general. If you like independent creators who do work that sounds like this guy's work, here's a thing you could do, some way to meet it in the middle. That would have made it easier, but it sounds like they went for the gold.
Send
out
a specific email just to do that for, like, I mean, that's like, I use my email like once every 3 months, you know? So to me, that's
got it. So in that case, he doesn't realize the hidden currency of like, I don't even do it every week for me. Yeah. And so that would be very out of character.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff but I don't. And so it was sort of like, because it's a big email. It was like this is like, if I was, you know, if I was to put a dollar amount on this, it's a lot. And I wouldn't, but, you know, that was sort of the thing I was trying. And then they're like, oh, and I'll give you my book to read. I'm like, that's not a favor, you know? So, but I was, because I gave them helpful advice. Hey, here's some ways to build your list, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, but can I use yours? And I'm like,
well, and again, this will end up being a whole episode down the road, but I've been working out the ideas on this whole story attention sales circle. And the temptation is always to go backwards. The circle can only go clockwise. We'll explain all this in a future episode because I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up writing a book on it. But the temptation is, this guy is strong in story. What he lacks is attention, and what he wants is sales. So he's asking you to pretty please leapfrog him and go backwards. But the problem is, what he should do is he's got to build his own audience. He's got to justify his own thing, or he needs to partner with somebody where he's doing you a service. For example, there are people who have mailing lists where the service that they offer is nothing but, I found another curious, awesome item. Do this. And so in that case, this is somebody who's hungry for story, and you're showing up and we're like, hey, I have a story for you. You know, blogs are this way, where it's like they wake up every morning, they're like, ah, crap, we got to go find story. So when somebody shows up saying, hey, I have a story for you, it'll make it easier for you to feed your attention, folks, and I'll end up getting sales. But at any rate, it just sounds like when somebody's strong in story, oftentimes what they want is to go straight to money, to sales. And sales is either money or clicks or signing up for things or whatever.
I don't know if their book is done yet either. That's the other thing, too. If it was a listener to the show or somebody we'd be going through or whatever, like, you know, like JF Dubow. Hey, if you're listening, if you ever ask, it's yours. You've been great, loyal, you know, you're super supportive and whatnot. He's a guy like, yeah, I'll do whatever I can for it. There's some people like, there's some, you know, in the family sort of people, some listeners and stuff, happy to do that for. This was just sort of a kind of a more rando thing. And I think back, my first mailing list was a physical mailing list I got to promote my magic book that Rand Woodbury gave to me. I had to get that. I got that after I literally fed his mountain lion for a summer.
Again, that's a thing of value. And you paid for it. Now, granted, it wasn't in the currency of money. It was in a different type of currency. But likewise, you have to earn a certain thing. And in this case, to bring it full circle, that's one of the things I'm really excited to watch this launch with Justin. Justin has spent 10 years with one goal, which is everyone in his life should feel like they owe him a favor. Like, that is the driving thing at all times. And this is the project where he's going to cash them all in at once. And I certainly hope, man, dude, I'm so excited. It does help that the product is absolutely stellar. It is fast. It is amazing. It's, with any luck, fingers crossed, the serial of politics. And I can't wait to very loudly promote the hell out of it.
Yeah. You know, look, it's obviously been a labor of love throughout trying to put it together. It's something that I'm personally very fascinated by. Yeah, you know, I so far I've been very happy because I haven't gotten, well, it makes me happy and wary that I have not gotten a ton. The show comes off as authoritative enough and researched and scholarly enough that I have not gotten the history pendants kind of feedback. I know that the bigger this gets, if this gets as big as I want it to be, that's going to be the stuff that I'm going to have to deal with the most, is the, like, wow, really? It was the this reaction, I mean, not the that
reaction. You do realize that that's gold in the making, because when the history pendants come for you, and they will come for you, congratulations, that is the pay-per-view special in which you get to respond to all of them. That is the extra bonus features. That is a standalone extra $2
Have you. I mean, I'm... You know, at this point, I think I'm probably more reticent about it because I'm in an emotionally vulnerable spot trying to get all this stuff kind of done and out the door. So I'm doing my best. I snapped at Ashley today while we were walking. I was walking her to the bus so she can go to BART or whatever. And she's like, well, you know, like if you find something that you really think would make the show better, you could always bump the release date.
Nope.
And I tensed up and I was like, what are you talking about? that is a lie. I did not react in anger. I reacted in total, just like shattered, vulnerable. I'm like, wait, do you not think it's, cause she's heard it all. I'm like, do you not think it's good enough? Like, do I need to delay it? Like, why would you say that? Why on earth would you say that I should delay it for another week? And she's just like, being a good wife, being a very supportive wife, somebody that's been with me through every kind of big project that I've launched, and the ones that have gone better than expected, the ones that have not gone as good as expected. She was just like, well, you're just really stressed right now. Like, I just want to let you know that it's like, and I had to explain to her via text. I'm just like, it was all of your instincts were totally genuine and I appreciate them and I love them, but like, you cannot tell me that I should move this deadline back because it is telling a Baptist preacher that, like, well, maybe God doesn't exist. You ever thought of that? Like,
I've been on all sides of that. And that moment where, you know, you're just the thing that is correct and right, but you're just emotionally, you know.
So
I mean, look, like, all of a sudden, if I actually I'll say this, I've not read the email yet. But I just saw sitting in my email is an email back from Hardcore History's Dan Carlin.
Ooh.
Who I emailed. I did a thing that I took a page from Brian's book of writing kind of unapologetic fan letters. And so there were a few people that specifically inspired Raise the Dead. And I specifically knew the elements that I treasured from their work and wanted to tell them that. While also just letting them know that there was a thing that they inspired. Let's say I click on that email, I open it up, and Dan Carlin's like, oh, yeah, that's really, really good. You want to know what? Like, I'd be very interested if it went into something that, like, was very compelling. Then I would think about, oh, crap, this would probably only take me a week, and I could make this better. So now maybe I reconsider doing the ebook and audiobook on launch. Maybe I push those a little bit. I release the first episode and go ahead with that. But otherwise, man, if you don't have a North Star and you don't believe that North Star is the truth, then it's hard to get big stuff done, especially when you are the primary motivator. And that's something where I think, you know, Brian, you have built around you a team, right? Bryce and Brandt, they are ultimately the ones saying, like, and Jason are ultimately the ones saying, like, hey, you know, we have, you know, run out of episodes. So what's good? Saturday, is Saturday good? Is Friday good? Is Thursday good that we're shooting? And you can be part of the system where it's like, ah, guess I got to make the donuts today. Let me go research what I need to do and then show up to the shoot and do it. Where Andrew, if you don't get up and write, nothing gets written. If you don't get up and promote, nothing gets promoted. And that's like, I know from your system when you were writing as a totally independent author, getting it done and knowing that, like, hey, look, judgment day is coming and the Lord will come and ask what you have done for him. And you better have a project that you are happy with to hand over, because guess what? The Lord shows up on December 5th, no matter what. And it's going to be whether or not you disappoint him or not.
Yeah. All right. Two things to wrap everything up. Number one, release, even if flawed, learn from what you do. Yep. You'll have another at bat. No one moment will define you. Instead, you're going to do a bunch of mixed metaphors, scratch off lottery tickets. One of them may end up making you a millionaire. Mm. Number two, all of our picks are, there's nothing you could do right now, but decide in your heart right now to join the publicity brigade that will happen.
Yes.
When we launch Raise the Dead.
If you do not subscribe to the Politics podcast, subscribe to that right now. This will come out on that feed. A version of the first episode.
Sign up on a bunch of mailing lists.
Sign up. Oh, yeah. Freepoliticalnewsletter.com. Sign up for Politics. You will hear the episode that Brian heard that I badgered Brian into listening. And he listened to one episode and then was very excited for the rest.
It's great.
And so you will hear that one
episode. It's great. They're great. All right, look, let's wrap it up because I want to hear what Dan Carlin said to you.
picks.
I have a very, very brief pick. What You Do Is Who You Are by Ben Horowitz, New York Times bestselling author, created multiple businesses. He talks about how rhetoric is destroyed by your actions, and you can talk about your corporate values of your company, but if you're a leader, your team will pick up on the cues that you indicate. So you could say, yeah, for example, I think Uber recently rewrote their corporate statement with some version of we do the right thing, period. And he sort of takes that to task. He's like, what does that even mean? You know, it's like do the right thing for the quarterly revenues, to do the right thing for morality, do the right thing for individual writers or for shareholders or what. Instead, basically, actions speak louder than words. And if you're the kind of person, if you're the kind of leader who can turn down money or to go to your board, and I don't know, we don't have a board, so this is all me learning this stuff. But if you can go to your board and explain why we're about to all lose a lot of money because I made this specific promise and I don't want to be the kind of leader that breaks promises, then that will yield you more benefits in the long term than doing what you know, being a little soft on, you know, the truth or whatever. And all of that rang true for me because the only resource we have at Scam Stuff, the only resource we have when it comes to Diamond Club and our fan base and, you know, Night Attack and even, you know, the Modern Rogue YouTube crew is that the only resource we have is the goodwill of our viewers. And it is morally incumbent both on a personal level and on a business level to maximize all of that by being consistent and making sure your actions back up your words. I thought I enjoyed it quite a bit.
He wrote The Hard Thing About Hard Things, which is a great book, which is cited by a lot of people in business building as, you know, the go-to book for understanding kind of the real work on that. So he's great. Bryce?
There's a new Pokemon game out, and I don't normally like those games, but I think this one's pretty good, and there are a lot of cute creatures in it. So, Pokemon Sword or Shield. How about that?
Talk about a show that I very much appreciate, despite the fact that it has a terrible name and an even worse theme song. It is The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, wow.
I love the editing on there. And it is so well done. It is so fun. It is rare that a show can be kind of as silly as it is, while also delivering a ton of really, really great factoids on the kind of business relationship between these toy companies and the content that kind of drove them, as well as sort of a path through the people that made a lot of the stuff that I was into as a child. So there are four new episodes up on Netflix. We watched the first two of them, Ashley and I, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers. And you find out all sorts of crazy stuff, including the fact that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme song, right? Iconic. Every time that there is spoken dialogue in that, do you know whose voice that is? That is a Big Bang Theory creator, Chuck Lorre.
Wait, I'm sorry, what? So he's like, he's a radical rat. Like that.
Yep, that's Chuck Lorre.
Oh, that's amazing.
But it gets all into kind of where, the one thing that's really, really good about the series is that when it does not shy away from a lot of the emotional beats of it, and the Ninja Turtles one specifically talks about the estrangement of Eastman and Laird, the two guys that initially created Ninja Turtles. And I think it handles those emotional beats exceptionally well. If you want an example of how to make real stories with really complicated and times esoteric elements compelling, fun, and real, Toys That Made Us, despite the fact that it's a terrible title, is really, really, really good.
Excellent. My pick is All Things Justin Robert Young.
FreePoliticalNewsletter.com. Just sign up. Look, it'll only take you a couple of seconds, and you will be kept up to date with all of Justin Robert Young's latest dealings. You're already a one-way friend with Justin Robert Young. Why not make it a two-way friendship by joining us over at FreePoliticalNewsletter.com?
Yay.
Thank you.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.